Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeff Rappaport.
And today, guys, on the Creative Financing Podcast, Jeff's going to talk about a question that one of our listeners asked us, or asked him rather, and it's about scaling it. How do you scale, how do you scale creative financing, or at least scale the amount of offers that you're making? So Dustin Hamill was on our podcast before. He's the one that asked this question to you, Jeff. So he still kind of uses you as his mentor. So let's talk about that. Let's get into it. How do you scale this? I know for you and with your experience, you can crank offers out left and right. And for someone like myself, I really got to put a lot of thought into it and play with a lot of numbers. So, and I'm sure anyone that's new and just starting to learn creative financing, it's probably the same way for them. But let's talk about that, Jeff.
So first of all, let's talk about, this question really came up from two different listeners, Dustin and Joe, who we've also done a number of questions from on our podcast. And they came in different ways. So I want to kind of explain just briefly the two different kinds of conversations that I had and why I believe it's all leading to the same thing. And then maybe I can shed some light on how you can kind of do this. But keep in mind that it's practice. I mean, Jonathan, you make cash offers regularly, don't you?
Yeah.
You can do that pretty quickly now, can't you?
Yeah. Right.
You still need certain amount of information to make those decisions, right?
Yes.
It did take some practice for you to get to this point, didn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so there's nothing that's going to be any different than learning how to make that cash offer than how to make the creative financing. Yes, there's more that goes, cash offer, you need to know the ARV, you need to know the repair costs, and you probably have some type of formula or some way of looking at the comps that would determine what you can offer. If you're a wholesaler, you know what that offer would be that rehabbers would pay you, and then you have to build in a fee.
Right.
Creative financing is similar, but there's just more variables. There's more things that you can play with. But once you know the variables and how they can be modified a bit, it's really not that hard. Yes, it might take a little bit longer, and I was just telling you that, hey, if you bring me a free and clear house, single family, and I already know the ARV, I know what kind of condition it's in, and I know if there's any underlying debt. If it's free and clear, I can easily have 3, 4, 5 offers to the seller in 5 minutes. I have a template. I already know where I'm going to try to go with this. And I'm just plugging in numbers. And I might have to play with a few numbers to see where I want to be, but I can do it super quick. So that's what I want you to understand first. Now let me kind of explain the two different questions and see why I think that it's all leading back to the same thing.
Okay.
So Joe, I reached out to Joe a few days ago and I said, hey, we're doing a podcast episode. You always come up with some good questions. Do you have any? And so he sent me an example of a property that he was working on. And I would read it all to you, but it's really long and it's really kind of confusing. And but in essence, what it was is a property that he thought was worth around $350. The owner was living in it, owner occupied, right? and they had a payment of like $1,500, $1,600, something like that, with taxes and insurance. And he felt like this property could rent for like $1,800. And it's in California, and the taxes get reassessed on a purchase. So the taxes could potentially go up if he was to buy it. And his question was, is how do I structure this as a rental if there's really like no money left in it, right? So there's no cash flow.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was really interesting. And so we'll come back to that in just one second. Then I had a conversation with Dustin, and he asked me, how many offers do you make a week? And I'm like, why do you ask? And he's like, do you do all the offers? And I said, yeah. And he said, how long does that take you? And I'm like, I'd be lying. I mean, we make offers on apartment buildings, you know, 12 units, commercial, even some land. Those aren't always as straightforward, and there's more, I need more information, right? But single family, even small multifamily, we do that on a regular basis, and it's pretty straightforward. And I'm like, depending on the situation, it might take me 5, 6, 7 minutes. And I said, I think we were talking about the video that we had made, because he was giving me some feedback on it. And I asked him if it would be helpful if we had a calculator that he could see me punching in the numbers. And he didn't really think so, because I told him it will slow me down. And, you know, I think that video is 45 minutes or so. And, you know, now these videos could end up being, you know, close to an hour. And I'm like, I don't know if that's what everyone really wants. And he's like, I don't know. How do you do this? How do you make that many offers? I told them last night, so I was out without internet yesterday, which is, you know, huge issue, right?
Right.
And, so last night at 10 o'clock, after the baseball playoff game, I'm like, I really should do some work. I didn't do any today. And so I cranked out 5 offers. I was done by 11:15. And I even looked up some comps. I was able to do 5 offers, and they weren't, several are out of my market. So it doesn't take that long. Now, here's what I gathered from having these two conversations, is that I think people are struggling with that you're trying to make every property kind of fit into a certain box, and they don't.
Right.
Every property is kind of unique, right? And we've gone over this. One of the things that we have done a number of times, Jonathan, is we look at what are the potential rents on this property? What are the rents, if there are any? What are the potential rents if it is rented or it's not rented? And right away, do we have an idea of, based on what the debt is, based on what the condition of the property is, we have a very good idea, could this be used as a rental? But there are times where it doesn't make sense to use as a rental, right? If we're dealing with a $500,000 home that's, you know, single family that would rent for $2,700 a month, probably not going to be used as a rental, right? I don't have to go work out a lot of numbers to know that that's probably not going to work rental-wise. Yeah.
There's just no cash flow.
So I think what the key is to understand, and don't worry, you don't have to start getting this like right away. A lot of this is repetition. And the more leads that you look at, the more deals that you practice structuring, the more you get a little better idea of where certain properties would fit. And there's no absolute either. We could have a property that could be a good rental that could still need work, right? I mean, it happens all the time.
Right.
You might have one that The property that we send out, that video that we're sending out, turned out to need more work than what I had anticipated. Mm-hmm. And so it might not have worked anymore for a rental, which was my first thought. And I was worried that it might not work for an owner-occupant because it needed more work than what I normally anticipate an owner-occupant willing to do.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
So did you have something that you wanted to say?
I was just going to add that on most of all of our episodes, anytime we're running numbers, we always urge our listeners to get out their financial calculator and run the numbers with us, because again, it just goes back to practice. Like you're saying, Jeff, you gotta punch numbers into a calculator. You got to look up what the market rents are in an area. You got to know what a property comps for. So you have to look at data and you have to crunch numbers. And so I just wanted to add that again.
So before I kind of give you an idea of what I'm suggesting, I want to take an example, and I'm winging this. So if it's not exact, you know,
I won't hold you to it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. But let's say that we have a property that has an ARV of $350,000. Okay. And let's say that it has a mortgage of $200,000.
Okay.
And that mortgage payment is $1,500 PITI, principal, interest, taxes, and insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say it would rent for $1,600. And let's say that it's in good shape, not great shape, dated. Okay?
Okay.
Tell me, what do you think we could do with this property? So is it a rehab? So let's say that also they're asking $335,000.
So if they're asking $335,000 and the ARV is $350,000, I wouldn't say it's a rehab, especially with.
Do you think that you could, let's say that, you know, to update this whole thing, it'd be $25,000-$30,000. What would be your cash offer? Just, you know, ballpark, quick.
Minus 25.
Yeah.
My cash offer would be about $255,000.
Okay, so right in that range, right?
Yep.
We're way away from what their asking price is, right? Correct. That's not to say that they would never even entertain it, but if we're making offers on properties where they're asking $335,000 and we're offering about $250,000, a very, very small percentage of our deals are going to get accepted, right? Correct. Our offers are going to get accepted.
Yeah.
Okay, so probably not a rehab, right?
Right.
What else could we potentially do with this property?
It might work as a lease option. If you said market rents are $1,600 and they owe $1,500
a month payment.
So yeah. You might be able to find a tenant buyer that's willing to pay a little more money per month.
Would it be good as a rental though?
No, not necessarily. I mean,
would you want to own this property to be able to rent it out and maybe make $100 a month?
Yeah, you probably wouldn't if any little repair came up.
If you're putting any money down, and they do have quite a bit of equity, you know, they've got $150,000 in equity.
Yeah.
If you had to put any money down, I mean, do you want to pay for the
upgrades,
the honor to own rental property where you make $50 to $100 a month cash flow?
No. So it doesn't really make sense as that. So, I mean, it would be more geared for an owner-occupant, someone who doesn't have credit, doesn't have the credit, but may, you know, has a good income and might have a down payment that they can put on the property. So it's definitely an owner-occupant scenario or a lease option scenario.
Now, even though it needs some work, right? I mean, even though it's dated, it potentially could be... Yeah, could there be some rehab done to it? Yeah, but not at their asking price. Right. Could it be a rental? It could be, but it's not going to be a very good one. And with the existing debt that's already on it, that's a problem. Correct. Now, let me ask you, same scenario, okay? Except that the property's free and clear, and it's in excellent condition. Now, what could we potentially do with it?
A lot of things. A lot of things.
Could we structure it as a rental?
Yeah, I could structure it as rental. If they're willing to, it could definitely work as a rental in that scenario.
Okay, so immediately we've just identified something, right? That sometimes it's based on
cash flow.
Well, the situation with the property. So what's owed? Uh-huh. What the rent could be and what the repair costs are. Just like what you were saying about a rehab, that you probably could pay a little more for a rehab that's going to cost 15 grand than one that's going to cost 80 grand, right? Yeah. The one that you have to put more money in, you want a better deal because you don't know. 80 grand could easily become 100.
Yeah.
15, it's like 15 probably not coming any more than 17, 18, right?
Right.
Same thing here. So, but we're trying to figure out the same thing. So in your case, you already know your exit strategy, right? You mm-hmm. know, hey, if I can buy this house at this price and put this much money in it, then I'm going to put it on the market and sell it. And right. I think that I'm going to sell it for this price.
Right.
The difference with creative financing is that you typically have several different options. And so now you've got to figure out which options are possible. Could you do like an Airbnb on something like this? I mean, depending on where it is, what kind of condition it's in. Sure, that might be a whole nother option. Sell it to someone that wants to do an Airbnb, or you buy it for an Airbnb.
Right, absolutely.
So one of the things that I wanted to make clear that maybe will help some of our listeners is that, so one, I can't make something fit where I want it to fit necessarily. So yeah. I can't make something a rental if it's not a rental. If it's not going to make sense cash flow-wise or cash on cash return wise, then I can't force it into this box. So just like as a rehabber, Jonathan, that you can't force someone that has a $350,000 home and they owe $275,000 and you need to buy it for $250,000, you can't force them to come down to $250,000 and pay the difference, right?
Right.
It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
So that's what people have to understand. Even though we're in creative financing, doesn't mean that we have infinite amount of options on every deal. Each one has its own unique situation that we have to take into account. Now, here's where you can become quicker to understand what you can do. So immediately, if you told me that we have a property that's worth $350,000, they're asking $335,000. Their payments, $1,500 PITI. It's a little bit dated, and they owe $200,000. Okay, once I run the rents, and I know that the rents aren't going to work, it's not a rental anymore. That's been eliminated.
Right.
I already know that it's not really a rehab because I'm not going to be able to buy it cheap enough to make it a rehab. So there's only two options left for me to even consider: owner-occupant. Okay, can these numbers still work that would make sense for an owner-occupant?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and if it does, and the condition's not, people will move into a good property that's
dated,
not all updated. Yeah. What people may not want to do is move into a property that needs a ton of work and can't see the end result. So you've got to be careful there.
Right.
The other part would be is that I would look at maybe with some negotiating, maybe I could do like a whole tail where, I can buy it enough below Their asking price above enough below the ARV where I felt like, hey, with a little to no work, I can literally go put it back on the market and maybe do like some short-term financing and get it to that. My whole point is that, and I want to be careful about this because you can't immediately come to this conclusion. You've got to do your due diligence on it. Mm-hmm. Look at who would be the potential buyer for this type of property. So if it doesn't fit into the rental box, that's eliminated. Okay, I'm no longer trying to figure out offers based on that. And to me, it's pretty easy. If I can't create enough cash flow for a buyer, then it doesn't work as a rental. People right. ask, do I make offers on every property that we get? No, I don't. And the reason for it is, I mean, I got a lead yesterday. It was on a duplex in Ogden. I'm very familiar with Ogden in terms of values and multifamily and rents. Okay? This property was a 2-bedroom, 1-bath each side. And it was rented for right now $900. And he lives in 1/2.
Yeah.
And he thought it could be rented for 11, which not a chance. So I figure 1800, maybe 1900 tops rents. What do you think a property like that, you know, I know you know Ogden somewhat as well. What do you think the purchase price should be? I mean, even if it were retail.
Somewhere around 200.
Let's say 260.
Okay.
He's asking 359.
Yeah.
So is it worth it to me to now try to educate this person that you're not only are you asking too much, you're about $100,000+ too high.
Yeah.
I mean, owner financing can compensate for some things, but why do I want to deal with that? Right.
Well, I don't know that it could compensate for that.
Yeah, I was telling someone I'd have to offer him like $500 a month, principal only payments for like the next 20 years. If you want to do that, we could talk. But
that works, right?
that's ridiculous otherwise. But right. what I want everyone to start thinking about is, so immediately when I see a property, so let's say that this same property is free and clear now. Okay, so I already still know I can't buy this property cheap enough to wholesale it to a rehabber, right?
Right.
So that part's gone. Yep. Yeah,
you're too far off.
Yeah. Now, if I'm going to make a cash offer, then maybe that's my cash offer is way down low. But that's not the one I'm expecting to get done. Now I could look at, hey, this could be a buy and hold. This could be an owner occupant. This could be something we just had a guest on, Adam, about buying and staying in the middle and either renting or lease optioning or selling back on terms and staying in the middle. I've got all kinds of stuff available to me. And now hopefully I've gathered enough information from the seller so I know how to structure it that might allow me to take advantage of all those different exit strategies. So sometimes I may have one or no exit strategies on a property. Sometimes I may have 3, 4, 5 or more exit strategies on a property. But if you can start to narrow that down, then you determine right away if it's something that we can deal with. And could you write offers on everything? Sure. I mean, if you're asking 300, I can't pay 300. So here's my 240 asking price. Take it or leave it. I don't do that. I try to make offers on, you know, 80-85% of whatever we see. But hey, sometimes the mortgage payment's a problem. What if the same property that we're using an example, what if they owe 280 and their monthly payment is $2,700 a month?
Yeah.
I mean, owner occupant's not going to pay that, right?
It's too high.
We're not getting a rental out of that.
Right, right.
The only way that we could look at it is, hey, do we think that we can just take over this debt really short term and maybe even have the seller pay it for a couple of months, and we could sell it retail and get it cashed out. That's it. So immediately it's like, hey, I'm looking at certain aspects of the lead, identifying what my potential exit strategies might be, and looking at whether I can structure something around that or not.
Right, right.
And that's how I'm able to scale. So I'm not just, you know, throwing numbers around here. Can I make this work? Can I make that work?
Yeah, because you can run numbers all day, but you got to, to me, it sounds like you kind of describe it as like it's filters, right? You're like filtering it. Is there cash flow? Yes or no? What's the underlying debt? And can we rent it out above that to, you know, to produce some cash flow? And if we can't, then it doesn't really fit the rental scenario. So you're able to eliminate even trying to create something for that. So now it's like, well, what would an owner occupant pay for it, right? And I think down the road, Jeff, or you know, soon we should come up with like a flow diagram kind of illustrating this. And so we gotta think about that a little bit, but I think that would be really good to have.
Yeah, if this doesn't work, go here. If that doesn't go here. Yes, go here.
Yeah, yeah. I seen a video like that once by Andy McFarlane, and I thought I thought it was pretty good. You've probably seen the same one.
Yeah. I probably have, and I think it would be good. But at the same time, the one thing that I want to caution you about is that there can be crossover, right? Absolutely. So I could sell to an owner-occupant. At the same time, I could be looking at selling to a landlord because it could make sense for both. Yeah. So I don't want you to say, okay, I got to figure out what the exit strategy is going to be. You know, we just did a property where and we talked about this on one of our podcast episodes where I structured it. It was going to be for an owner occupant. There was no cash flow rental wise. Their payment was, I think the rent was like 13. Their payment was like 11 something without taxes, without insurance, without property management, without anything. And an investor bought it. I don't know why.
You never know. I mean, if it's, and that's the other thing is if there's an investor that's familiar with an area and he just wants to hold, you know, property in that area long-term, maybe his strategy is appreciation over time because he knows the area well. I mean, you just never know in those scenarios.
So I like using this strategy to be able to make my offers and make them quickly. Otherwise, I am not going to spend 2 hours going back and forth on numbers to make one offer. That is not happening.
Yeah.
I might spend 30, 40 minutes making an offer on multi-million dollar apartment building or mobile home park because I got to go through all the numbers and figure out the expenses and the pro forma and whatever. But hey, we're going to make a whole lot more money than a $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 assignment fee on something like that. I'd rather spend a little more time on that. But these kinds of deals, I want to quickly be able to look at and say, okay, this is going to either fall into this category or maybe these two categories or this. And then I'm going to structure based on that. So I immediately know, hey, if we have a multifamily, could it potentially be something that someone would live in? If we have a fourplex, could someone actually buy it to live in one unit? Sure. I don't really plan on that. I'm planning on that I'm going to sell it to an owner occupant or a landlord.
Right.
So I want that cash flow to be enough to make their cash on cash return that 12% or higher.
Right. But right.
Maybe if I'm close, maybe I try to say, hey, what if I could find someone that wanted to live in it and, you know, for free, basically, use the other three units to pay their own mortgage.
Yeah.
I just came up with this right now, and I think I'm going to start looking into that a little bit. So yeah. give me a little more leeway in terms of creating offers. But yeah. If you want to become more efficient, it's going to take repetition. the more leads you look at, the more offers you put together, the more you'll start to get a better feel for how these need to work. Try to at least disqualify certain options based on the property, the condition, the price, the debt owed on it.
Yeah.
That way you can narrow down what you're trying to do.
Yeah, you got to sift, sort, and filter through them to be able to scale, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
well, and you're able to do that.
Even not even scaling. You don't want to spend, I don't want to spend all day long making 5, 6, 7 offers. Like I said, I got 5 offers done in probably an hour and 15 minutes last night. And I had to look up some comps. So normally I can do that in 5 to 10 minutes. If you can knock out offers in 5 to 10 minutes and you are a one man show, one woman show, I mean, you could spend an hour or two making offers a day and getting out quite a few offers, and you'll eventually get deals, right? Yeah, whether you're a beginner, whether you're trying to build on what you already have. And by the way, we look at creative financing maybe a little differently. If you wanted to scale, couldn't you come up with, hey, I've got a 3-year term deal, I've got a 5-year term deal, or I have a principal only deal, I have an interest only deal, and I got a cash offer. I mean, and it could be as simple as, you know, Joe McCall, who we've had on our podcast before, has his own calculator, right? That he basically said on our call, hey, if I want to stay in the middle, I give them an option where it's like 15% less in rents, and it's 15% less in value. If they want me to just wholesale it, then I can pay them their, you know, pretty much their retail price and their retail rents. So he may have 3 offers. You can simplify this. We're talking about literally looking at each deal and catering an offer to them. That's not how you have to do this.
Right, right. You're absolutely right. To be able to, if you want to truly scale, I guess you gotta kind of have these formulas that you can plug the dealers into.
Certainly can.
But it's sifting and sorting, because that's not going to work. Like you said, the scenario just went over. It's not going to work for a landlord. And in some scenarios, it's not going to work for an owner occupant. So you can't do it on everything. And those are probably the ones you just want to pass on.
But as a rehabber, and I know that you look at stuff differently now than you did, you know, maybe 2 years ago. But, you know, 2 years ago when you were generating leads, didn't they have to fit in your box? I mean,
hammer.
Hey, if someone came to you and said, I got a $300,000 home, I want 280, I owe 270 on it, your response would probably be, sorry, man, can't help you.
Yeah,
that's exactly not what I do.
Yeah.
If that's the worst case scenario that happens, then then you decide, is it worth that extra time, or do I just set up how I want it to be? And some people it'll fit, others it won't. Move on.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. Love it. And I hope, I hope that answers Joe's question and Dustin's question. And I hope it kind of give some direction and some guidance to the rest of you guys out there who kind of have the same question, like, how do you quickly make offers on these? And the answer is, you got to be able to sift, sort, and filter them.
Let's call this something like understanding your exit to figure out your offers, or something like that. The people understand that,
you first have an exit strategy.
Well, you at least have to have an idea, and not every exit is going to apply to every lead.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, guys, hope you've enjoyed this. If you're loving our show, please, rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. And then we are also looking for guests who have gone out there and used any of the strategies that we teach on this show. So we're talking to you out there. If you or the guy or gal who's went out there and you've used any one of the strategies that we've talked about on this show, please give us a call on our hotline and tell us about the deal you put together, how you've been able to use it. We want to get you on our show as a testimonial to the rest of our audience and our listeners out there to show that they can do it as well. So let me give you that hotline number. So this is our creative financing hotline number. You can leave questions, comments there, or if you're that guy or gal that's used one of these strategies, please leave us a voicemail on that line, and we'd love to get you on the show. That number is 877-409-8090. Again, 877-409-8090. And you can also text that number to get special access to a video that you created, Jeff, that shows you step-by-step, walks you step-by-step on how you actually do this. So what you're
start
talking
to finish.
Yeah, start to finish on a single family home where you structure creative financing and you go over the exit strategy and how you guys made money on that deal, wholesaling it. So if you guys want special access to that, just text the words creative financing to our hotline number or CFP to that hotline number, and it'll shoot you back a link for that video. So go check that out. We're also on Facebook and YouTube, the Creative Financing Podcast on Facebook, and the Creative Financing Show on YouTube. And we've been trying to make more videos for that. So if you're on there and you're itching for more content, just be patient with us. Video's kind of something new that we're starting out. So we appreciate your guys' patience on that. I know there's been some people like, give us some whiteboard, you know, give us write on the whiteboard and show us what you're doing kind of thing. But so just be patient with us, guys. We appreciate you. Any last words, Jeff, on that?
Yeah, always looking for some people to work with all across the country. We have two different apprentice programs. If you have any interest in working with me, call the hotline. Let me know. I will get back to you, and I'll give you some details on how they work.
Awesome. Okay, guys, until next time, create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.